Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi there, and welcome to the Stock Club podcast, coming to you from the top floor of Rubycoin HQ here in Dublin, Ireland. In this, the first episode of 2019, we're going to talk about the rise of veganism, the fall of alcohol, and the David versus Goliath battle between McDonald's and a small Irish restaurant chain. So to kick off today, let's have a look at some of the news stories that caught our eye over the past few weeks. Emmett, do you want to go first?
Sure. It's a time of year, James, where people and the media like discuss diets and exercises and new way of living and a better future, what with New Year's resolutions. Yeah. But there appears to be a non-fad movement underway away from eating meat. And that's the new story that I'm going to talk about this
week. Okay, yeah. So vegetarianism, veganism.
Exactly. So there is a public conversation around the rise of vegetarianism and vegan diets and how eating less meat reduces your carbon footprint and even reduces your chance of serious disease.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, here in Dublin, Ireland, as we were just discussing before we went live, there's a whole bunch of billboards going up around the country promoting a vegan life and how virtually anything that involves an animal has a degree of cruelty to it. So whether your angle is carbon footprint cruelty or your personal health, there's a lot of conversation around at the moment about going vegetarian or vegan. So I had a look into it, and there was a definitive study led by a team led by Dr. Marco Springman at Oxford University that very recently concluded that huge reductions in meat eating are actually essential to avoid climate change.
Yeah.
So this is one of the key, I suppose, this is a kernel of reversing climate change, or at least addressing climate change. So when you analyze the food system's impact on the environment, that report said that Western countries need to reduce beef consumption by 90%, which is absolutely huge.
Yeah,
and here in Ireland, we're one of the top consumers of beef in Europe, as it happens. And it's estimated that per year we all eat 19 kilos of beef for everyone in the country here. So, but it's a bigger problem than Ireland for sure. And just some fast facts on meat eating. 30% of the calories consumed globally by humans come from meat products, such as beef and chicken and pork and the likes.
Yeah.
And global meat production has grown between 4 and 5-fold globally since 1961. The 6 largest meat companies have a combined value of around $60 billion market cap in the US. And the largest is Hormel, which is boasting around $23 billion valuation. So basically, we're looking now at a movement away from meat. And these giant businesses are now investing in businesses and startups that are moving us away from animal-based proteins.
Yeah.
So for me, when I think about this movement, it's akin, like when we were kids or when I was a child, it's broadly speaking, every adult smoked.
Yeah.
It was just kind of the way it was. You'd turn on the TV and it was okay to see somebody smoking while being interviewed. Or smoking in the movies. And now the world has woken up and accepted and fully embedded the changes that were necessary for health and well-being. And I think we're now looking at something similar in meat. And when I heard a few years ago that Bill Gates was investing in plant-based proteins and animal alternatives to meat production, I actually thought it was a bit crazy. He'd lost the plot, but actually it was quite visionary, because I really believe now we are in the early stages. We haven't quite past a tipping point for people to go vegan, or because the alternatives aren't there yet, but it appears that they will start to appear in our restaurants and shelves that will make people like me. I am a meat eater and I enjoy eating meat with a meal, but when there is something there that looks and tastes as good as what I'm used to, me representing the average meat eating consumer will actually go for those alternatives.
So with investing hats on then, is there any companies out there at the moment that are kind of leading this charge?
You know, there's an awful lot of well-funded non-listed businesses leading the charge. Like, take, for example, Impossible Foods is a major player in the space, and they've had about $506 million of investment into the business so far, and they're leading the way for, as they say, sustainable global food system. So what they're doing is developing new technologies to produce great plant-based foods that outperform existing meat and dairy products in taste and nutrition, and again at cost as well, because cost is very important. So right now I don't see a whole lot of investable opportunities for the average woman and man on the street. But what I do think is that over the very long term, a lot of stocks that we love and own today, for example, McDonald's, the biggest, well, the second biggest restaurant chain in the world. I actually get confused with Subway or McDonald's the biggest, but anyway.
I have a statistic about McDonald's coming up next. I think it might be the biggest.
Okay, cool. There you go. So McDonald's is arguably one of the biggest movers, sellers of meat in the world. It will more than likely start to offer meat-based alternatives in its burgers sooner than we realise. And when that happens, we'll start to see the tipping point come our way.
Yeah, very interesting. Maeve, you mentioned McDonald's, and what news story were you... what were you looking up?
There's a theme of sorts happening here, because the news story that I was going to chat about today is to do with burgers. There was a kind of a landmark trademark case that we all discussed here in the office, where a smaller, not that small, I'll give a kind of a sense of scale, of an Irish-founded burger company called Supermax had actually won a trademark claim against McDonald's. And it's kind of been thought of as this, like, David versus Goliath kind of landmark trademark case. So just to kind of set the scene, so McDonald's sells 75 burgers a second. It feeds 68 million people per day, and that equals about 1% of the world's population.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Right, so that's a lot of McDonald's burgers.
Well, Supermax and Air Square in Galway City feed 68 million people every Saturday night.
It's funny.
I've been there.
I was going to mention, you might be familiar with Supermax because your fellow co-founder possibly is partial to one of their burgers. But no, they're very popular Irish-founded fast food joint, burger joint. So their sense of scale would be that they serve about 320,000 customers per week. But they're a serious company, you know. The profits are in the millions, and you know, we're fond of them here. So basically what happened is it was to do with the brand name and the burger name. So Supermax has a story behind the name. The founder is a man called Pat McDonough. In the same way that the McDonald's brothers were the people who sold the company to Ray Kroc, so it comes from a name. I think his Mac, maybe when he played the equivalent of high school football, it's called GAA here, because he was a good player, they used to call him the Super Mac. And so that's, you know, he built his brand based on this story, and he decided that he wanted to start selling something called a Mighty Mac. And McDonald's said, absolutely not. If you're thinking of expanding into other European markets, you're going to cause brand confusion. And we want the market share, and we're the big guys and we're the giants. So we're going to stomp down on top of you and make sure that you can't do that. But actually, they went basically down the wrong route, and they lost the case, because it wasn't problematic from a brand name perspective. It was that they tried to go in and say, we're going to patent this product name. And they didn't. They proved in the court that they didn't have enough market dominance to patent the burger. So the Big Mac was the Big Mac, and the Mighty Mac is the Mighty Mac, and Supermax won it. And it was kind of a massive win for the little guy, you know, which doesn't usually happen.
I was only reading yesterday that Supermax are now going into London to open a restaurant there, so they're going to become a bigger irritant to McDonald's than they were just in Ireland alone.
I think so. They're going to keep going. I think I've heard they want to keep going and extend to Europe. And I think some of their outlets are starting to be franchised already. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the idea of taking on McDonald's in a trademark case, like, the cost and the drain and the pain for Supermax must have been huge, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But how worth it now? Like, they're on the kind of global stage of news having won that trademark case.
And I think they have the Papa John's franchise, Supermax.
They do. They do pizza, exactly. It's a separate brand name, exactly. It's in the same store, right? But it's on the other side of the counter.
Papa John's is a stock that's been floated for many years. I had shares in it, I'd say, at least 10 years ago. And like so many other stocks, I only wish I'd held it, because it has become a brand now that's it's up there with Domino's from a scale and size.
I never go for the Papa
John's. What is it about pizza stocks? Then one story I was looking at, and again, kind of theme running through all three of these stories, is that Americans are drinking less alcohol. So a recent report by the Wall Street Journal told us that for the second year in a row, US alcohol volumes have dropped about 0.8% last year. And beer, it seems to be the worst hit category of alcohol, with volumes down about 1.5% in 2018 compared to a 1.1% decline in 2017. It's not just exclusive to beer, though. Wine and spirits are also growing, but at a slower rate from years previously. And since in the last 20 years, the amount of pure ethanol, which is, I suppose, the very clinical way of measuring, you know, alcohol consumption, over the last 20 years, maybe 30 years or so, it's fallen about 16% per person, which just shows the massive decline, really, in alcohol consumption in the US. You know, which is a challenge for a lot of companies. You know, in our Invest app, we've three or four companies that deal primarily with you know, that sell alcohol. We've Constellation Brands, we've Brown-Forman, we've Boston Beer, Sam Adams. With Diageo as well. So like, these are companies, you know, whose whole business is built around, you know, selling alcohol. And it seems that there's a kind of, you know, this is just limited to the US, but it seems that there is kind of a worldwide shift away from, you know, not alcohol consumption as such, but the amount of alcohol consumed. And there's a few reasons around this. We can see, you know, marijuana is the hot topic of the day, and especially, you know, with its recent legalization in Canada. And I think people are perhaps finding different ways to self-medicate themselves, if you want to put it that way. And there's also an increasing awareness. And Emmett, you mentioned tobacco back in the 80s. There's an increasing awareness as well about the kind of the dangers of alcohol. Now it's not breaking news that, you know, too much alcohol is bad for you, but there was for years. There was you know, there was very scientific studies that said, you know, a glass of red wine a week has antioxidants and stuff like that. But that's increasingly becoming disproven.
Ooh.
So, you know, whereas tobacco kind of had a severe drop once the health effects were realized, you know, the drop in alcohol consumption is probably a more gradual drop, but yeah, it's becoming more and more obvious that that, you know, that people are kind of turning away from alcohol more so. But interestingly, there is a lot of ways that these companies that I've mentioned are kind of combating this, and one of the big ways is called premiumization. I'm definitely going to trip over that word, but what premiumization is essentially is that companies like Diageo and like Brown-Forman have realized that instead of selling a high volume of, you know, low price alcohol, they're selling now less alcohol but at higher prices, so increasing the margins on them. So you think of things like, I know Diageo released a new version of Ketel One vodka. All of these really high branded spirits, selling them for a lot, you know, at much higher price but at a lower volume. So it's kind of increasing that kind of experience of drinking. You know, you go and you get a nice cocktail that might cost you, you know, twice as much as a beer, a pint of, you know, Coors Light or whatever. So it's kind of getting more bang for their buck, maybe. And also there's a high investment coming in non-alcohol products at a lot of these companies. So one major kind of brewer, Anheuser-Busch, has recently appointed a global head of non-alcoholic beverages. So this person is leading their efforts to diversify away from purely alcoholic drinks. And non-alcoholic drinks actually make up more than 10% of their brewer volumes at the moment. So it's much like what you mentioned, Emmett. It's this kind of global shift in consciousness away from, you know, one thing that we've been kind of doing for a long, long time towards, you know, as we become, you know, as science advances and research advances and I suppose cultural tastes advance, that we're becoming more and more aware and changing our tastes, I suppose. And it's really will be a measure going forward of which companies can adapt fast enough will be the ones to survive.
Yeah, and I think like booze is escapism. Like alcohol is a mechanism for socializing. It's a mechanism for kind of letting go of the day's worries, perhaps.
Mm. Yeah.
And the alternatives that are out there today, there's never been more. Mm. So if you take in the 70s, bad example. I was going to say marijuana in the 70s, but you know, the availability, 25% of Americans today can buy legal weed.
Yeah.
And so one in four people have now access to an alternative to alcohol. Now, your views on the long-term health effects of either can be informed by a lot of different reports. And in fact, yesterday I was only reading, and this is off topic, but I was reading that there has been an increase in the number of admissions into mental health facilities in the areas where marijuana has been legalized.
Yeah.
Which, and it was down to the fact on the piece I was reading that if you take, if you were at Woodstock and had weed or took weed today, the volume of, is it CP? What's the name of the potent?
THC.
THC was something like 4% back in the 60s and 70s. And
now it's kind of like, it's dangerous now.
It's as high as 20%. Yeah. So it's analogous to drinking a pint of beer versus a pint of vodka. So there are other considerations too. I'm going off point, but I hear
there,
you entirely.
There is one correlation there though with James, what you mentioned about, is it premiumization?
Yeah.
In that you mentioned the kind of levels of the potent part of marijuana, but like the idea of a drink for me now, this might be an age thing, is I want it to taste good, be well made, I want it to be enjoyable. I actually don't care if it's very low alcohol volume.
Yeah.
Whereas I think before, you know, again, an age thing, it would have been, let's get, you know, a tin of cider or
bang
let's
for
get.
Your book. Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe it's an age thing, maybe it's a cultural thing, maybe it's a class thing. You focused on the US, but I definitely think that alcohol now to be enjoyed needs to be premium.
Mm, really, yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. And like certain alcohols as well are linked to, you know, certain experiences. Like here in Dublin, you know, I wouldn't say there's a tourist that comes to Dublin that doesn't have a pint of Guinness.
Very
so
true.
That obviously helps Diageo out.
Yeah.
So that's some of the recent news stories we wanted to take a look at. We're going to move on now to one of our most popular segments from the last year, companies we never talk about. Emmett, what company from our Invest app do you want to shine a little light on today?
So it's not that I never talk about it, but I guess I'd like to shine a spotlight on Align today.
Yeah.
Because if you open the Invest app and just take a look at the five-year graph of Align, it very recently was floating around $400 per share and very recently dipped below $200 per share. So effectively, the business, the stock, is trading at a discount to its highs from several months ago. That doesn't mean it's cheap, but I do believe Align is an outstanding investment at the moment. And when we just have a look at the business, it has a massive 12 million annual customers worldwide. It has 300 million patients, and it operates in 103 countries through 136,000 trained doctors. That is a very well absorbed system or technology or orthodontic system. So the business has 900 patents and it really defends them. Mm. And it's a throwback to Maeve's point there with McDonald's versus Supermax. Align go after smaller players who try and encroach into their space with this giant patent book of 900 or so patents. And on top of all of this, what they have is big data insights. They can see global mega trends on how societies are approaching their orthodontic treatments, which ones they prefer, you know, price points, you know, recovery or correction times. And they are the leading brand in the space. So I really believe that investors today will be very richly rewarded in the medium to long term for Align.
Yeah, and Align are surely benefiting as well from the kind of the rise in, I think there's a big focus now on image. Like, there's always been a focus on image, but I think in the past few years, and, you know, I would certainly blame it partially on things like Instagram, that, you know, people are becoming way more obsessed with image now. And I think that's probably definitely benefited Align in some way.
Yeah, I think in the US, orthodontic treatment has been absorbed for a long time. And, you know, movies like Austin Powers in the 90s would parody the UK's absence of orthodontic. But, you know, but that's very much so, even here in our small microcosm of Ireland, we can see that there's been an increase in orthodontics in the last decade or so.
Yeah, for sure.
And just there on, I think it was middle of December, a line announced their 6 millionth Invisalign patient, which was a tween patient from China.
Yeah.
And I guess there's two messages in there. They're selling in China, and that the Invisalign product is getting out there at scale. It's a giant product, and it's aesthetically pleasing, or it's invisible.
Is Align's USP the fact that it's an invisible, easier way, less painful way to straighten your teeth?
Effectively, yes.
Yeah.
So you can have an Align brace on and nobody notice, whereas the train tracks, as they were called around.
I went through the hell of train tracks, I remember the pain of getting them tightened.
It's a serious mechanical thing.
And shout out to my parents for paying the however many thousand they paid to get it done. I appreciate it, but boy, I would have preferred Align.
Yeah, absolutely.
Old train tracks kind of look barbaric compared to
Align.
Medieval torture.
Yeah. So that was companies we ever talk about, and the company this month was Align. The ticker symbol, Emmett, is...
ALGN, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it. So when we were planning out this podcast a few days ago, we somehow ended up talking about some crazy stories linked to some of the world's most largest and recognised companies. Based on that, we decided to try out a new idea today, fact or fiction. So beforehand, each of us came up with a statement that is either factual or fictional. And we're going to read it out. And the rest of us are going to try and decide if it's truth or an outright lie. So we're going to figure out who's the liars in the group.
Okay.
Maeve, do you want to go first?
Certainly. So I did a quick scan about what company in our Invest app I would like to present a piece of fact or fiction about.
Yeah.
I went with a big one. I went with Google.
Okay.
And the statement is that Google hires goats to mow its lawn. And I'm going to go poker face on this. I'm looking at you both waiting to see what you think.
That's goats. A good one.
So one of the world's most valuable companies, but it sounds it's new age. It is
new
it's
age.
Hippie,
and hippie-ish. I'm sure they have a small carbon footprint, probably zero.
Yeah, where's
their
lawn? HQ?
Exactly in Mountain View. So it's quite a sizable piece of greenery.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I'm gonna say fact. I think it's kind of weird, and it's kind of trying to be interesting enough for a company like Google to do.
Okay, Emmett?
I'm going to go with fact as well. It's crazy. I never would have guessed it.
Giles, the sound booth, his thumbs downing me, saying it is fact.
Oh.
Emmett and James, you're both right. It is absolutely
true.
No,
I never would have guessed it.
It's part of their green strategy as a company. It's part of their low carbon approach. And around their HQ in Mountain View, they have a team, a crew of goats, and they graze. And apparently it's more cost efficient than getting people to mow the grass.
Yeah.
And they have names, and they're almost pets.
So I can't imagine the grass looks well kept, you know, like
I think they do a very good job, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think they do quite a good. When you leave them to it and you just let them munch,
they just kind of
like a horse in a field would. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Respect to the goats.
There you have it.
Emmett.
Okay. I have a couple, but I think I'll hone in this. Costco.
Yeah.
A Fortune 500 business to consumer B2C company spends nothing on advertising. Fact or fiction?
$0 on advertising.
Hmm.
I'm not sure about that. It's...
Yeah, that sounds unbelievable.
Yeah, like, to have it at, like, absolute zero. Like, I don't know.
Well,
I'm stumped.
I'm going to go with trying to read your face, and I'm going to say that it is, like, the goat's fact.
I'm going to go with fiction. I don't think it could be absolute zero.
James, you're the winner.
Ah.
They nearly spend nothing. They have a line item on their balance sheet, and it's negligible. I mean, it's ridiculously
low.
What
are we talking, Mike?
So you're nearly, just a couple of million.
Oh.
Which for a business, that's worth billions.
Okay.
You know, like their advertising budgets are down on the floor. So
not quite nothing.
Not quite nothing, but I would say you will not find another business to consumer brand.
Who's managed that?
That spends so little on advertising.
Right. So they're just that well known.
They're just word of mouth referral, location of stores, people talking to people, and just such compelling value proposition. it's just known.
Right.
Right. You ready for my one?
Yep.
Yep.
Last year, the British designer brand Burberry destroyed more than $35 million worth of their own clothes.
Yeah. I know. I know they did this.
Yeah. Now, the number amount, I don't know, $35 million. It could be $100 million but, or $5 million, but I do know that they decided to destroy a lot of
clothes. I'm going to have to lie next time. Yeah. Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
It's they destroy basically tons and tons of their own clothes just to protect the brand.
Yeah.
They're not the only company to do it. I know Nike, there was a fairly infamous article, I think it was early last year, where this guy found like bags and bags of brand new Nike shoes in New York somewhere, and when he opened them up, they were perfect apart from they were all slashed, so they were unwearable basically. But it's just to protect their own brand.
Oh, absolutely.
which seems pretty pretty depressing.
Yeah. That is an uncomfortable fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we have a hidden extra?
I have one more.
Wild card. So Disney World Florida is the same size as San Francisco. Fact or fiction?
I was actually there recently.
Oh, you were there recently. Yeah. I was there when I was 10.
Disney
World.
Disney World.
Yeah.
Okay.
Disney World Florida is the same size as
San Francisco City.
So is that like because of all the different parks of Disney World, like there's Epcot and...
So the real estate owned by the Disney Corporation for their Florida operation.
Yeah.
Is equal to, less or greater than San Francisco City?
I'm going to say, I've never been to San Francisco, but
it's compact.
Pretty massive.
But the city, though.
Oh, yeah, the city. I've never been, but yeah. Disney World is massive. I'm going to say it's true.
I think I'm going to say fact, yeah.
You're both correct. Yeah. So about 43 to 45 square miles. San Francisco and Disney World, Florida are the same size, give or take.
That's insane. Okay, so with that, that was our new fact or fiction section. We might bring it back next podcast. We'll see what the reaction is to that.
Yeah.
So you might have noticed today that there is one very important voice missing. Rory, our head analyst, is off on a month-long trip around Vietnam at the minute. However, for our elevator pitch to finish out the show, he's kindly sent us a recording from somewhere deep in the Vietnamese countryside, and I think he is pitching an entire country to us, so we'll play that now.
How's it going, guys? Obviously, I'm not in the studio right now. I'm actually in the town of Sapa, which is in the northern mountains of Vietnam, where I have been travelling for the last month or so. And even though I've done my best to stay away from the market news, I do have an elevator pitch for you, and that is an investment in Vietnam itself. This is just a remarkable country. It's right next to China, obviously a huge market. It's attracting investment from the likes of Intel, Canon, Foxconn. They've all invested huge amounts of money here recently. But really, what I think is the main reason to invest in Vietnam is the Vietnam people themselves. I've never in my life met such friendly, hardworking people. There's 96 million of them here. They're very young. The median age is 30, and over half of them speak English, so... I don't know what the vehicle is yet, but my elevator pitch for this month is Vietnam itself. So there it is. I'll talk to you next week. Have a good one. Bye.
So that was Rory in Vietnam giving us his pitch on Vietnam.
There is an ETF where you can buy Vietnam, just pure play Vietnam ETF.
What's it called?
I can't recall. I researched it, I had a look at it, and it is pure play. I think it's the only ETF.
Okay.
And we'll put details of it up. We'll talk about it or broadcast it or tweet it or something.
I'm sure we'll put it in the Invest app. Yeah. So, Emmett, your elevator pitch then.
Well, I don't have the advantage of having been in the country about to pitch. It's the next door neighbor to Vietnam, and it's the giant in the room, it's China.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm just going to pitch China as a nation is that PwC, the giant accountancy firm, recently attempted, I guess, to rank 32 of the world's largest economies in the year 2050. So they got out their crystal ball and they said, here's the new world order in the year 2050. And it was based on their projection of GDP, or gross domestic product, and PPP, which is purchasing power parity. So two numbers that basically tell us the economic health of a business, or sorry, of a country. So, and they, I guess they reflect a country's economic productivity and their standard of living. So in top spot, was China,
yeah.
to no great shock. So what PwC said was that by 2050, China will not only have overtaken the US, but its economy will be much, much bigger than the US. And according to the report, its GDP will stand at around nearly $60 trillion compared to the US's at around $34 trillion.
Oh.
So, I mean, China as an economic mega force is yeah. going broadly in one direction. And it said that the Asian giant will account for about 20% of the world's economy, which will be higher than India at 15% and the US at 12%. Mm. So it would also have an aging population that won't be able to enjoy the same pace of growth as it had in the four decades in the run-up to then. Nonetheless, China and India will be far bigger than the US in 2050. And that's my pitch. So
yeah.
how you buy into China, I believe, is by buying the best businesses that are run to the most exacting of US standards.
Yeah.
So if a business is listed, a pure play Chinese business is listed in the US stock on one of the two big US stock markets,
mm.
it's playing ball by American standards.
Yeah.
And therefore you're getting American governance in a business that's operating in China. And we have a few of those businesses in Invest.
And importantly, they're already in China because it's a very difficult market to enter.
Very difficult. So
yeah.
you to be born in China and have China in your DNA as a business is very important.
Okay. Maeve, which elevator pitch are you going to pick?
Oh, wow, this is a big one. I'm picking a whole country.
And I should add, Vietnam is on the PwC report.
Yeah.
I won't tell you what ranking.
No, so I'm gonna go with just an off-the-cuff reaction. Rory, I really liked the ambience and the scooter beeps in the background of your pitch, but I'm going to go with Emmett's.
Because Rory's not here and he can't
possibly.
I'm going to go with Rory's.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in Vietnam before a few years ago too. It's a gorgeous country. I wasn't really sizing it up as an investment at the time, I have to say, but... That's your head analyst for you. It never turns off. So that's about it from us here today at Stock Club. Remember, in addition to our new name, we're also going to be recording episodes twice a month from now on. So you'll be hearing a lot more from us over the next few months. I also want to quickly mention that we recently published a brand new investing report for 2019, 43 Star Stocks to Smash the Market. This is a collection of some of our best performing stocks from the Invest app, plus five more stocks we're most excited about for 2019, and you can access them all in this bumper report. Subscribers to the Invest app should have already had access to this report, but if you want to buy it as a once-off, simply Google 43 Star Stocks to Smash the Market or follow the link provided with this episode. If you have anything you want us to discuss on the next podcast, make sure to leave a comment or email us at pod@rubycoin.com. That's pod@rubycoin.com. And as always, there's plenty of new things to check out in the Invest app this month, including our first star stock and stock of the month for 2019. Thanks everyone for listening to the first episode of the Stock Club podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Please make sure to rate, review and share the podcast. And from all of us here, see you in 2 weeks and happy investing.